is Truth Frequency Radio.
The Wicked Ones, obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Hello. Welcome. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Wherever you guys are at on planet Earth, if you guys are listening from someplace other than planet Earth, first of all, that's really impressive. And I'd encourage you to go ahead and call into the soundboard or the phone board there, because we'd like to talk to you if you're calling from a spaceship. Anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. It is, of course, Tuesday, the 17th of February. My name's JD. We are live right now. This is, of course, Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. Gonna be a big week. I think I've been talking about that, well, since about last week. And, I don't think we are dropping the ball, so far. And, yesterday's interview with Alana was absolutely amazing. I hope you guys took a lot away from that. Cannot thank you guys enough who, are making Red Pill Reports part of your daily, deprogramming, and also all of you guys who are showing up in the chat room every day. Love seeing all the familiar faces in there. Very, very cool stuff. I love Truth Frequency Radio more and more every day, it seems. The other hosts are just absolutely amazing. I have to tell you guys, just love being with this network, having the chat room, seeing, all you guys out there getting a chance to have immediate feedback. It's just super cool. I mean, it just doesn't get cooler than this. This is technology, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, today's show, gotta get into this real quick. Stuart Rhodes is gonna be joining us. And I'll tell you what, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and she was asking me about the show and the guests that were coming up this week. And of course, I'm all excited like I always am. And I'm saying, oh, you know, Stuart Rhodes is gonna be on. You would have thought that I was talking to her about how to make, a kite out of garbage bags or something, just completely oblivious to Stuart Rhodes. The Oath Keepers had no idea. So we're gonna do a little bit of a 411 just to start off so that we can drive it into people's minds what the Oath Keepers is all about and how they work and what they're trying to do. But we're going to spend a lot of time today. We're going to get the perspective of Stuart Rhodes on what the actual problem is that we are facing here in the country. And of course, we're talking about the division between law enforcement, or I guess I should say policy enforcement officers and citizens. And so we'll get his perspective on the problem and then talk about how he thinks we can move forward with some solutions, not just with Oath Keepers, but here in our own communities as well. So do stick around for that. That's going to be a fantastic day. I got to tell you, Rick Rozoff is going to be on the show tomorrow. He is one of my best friends and also a preeminent expert on NATO. We're going to get to the bottom of this entire Ukraine situation. I have this feeling, I don't know about you guys, but I have this feeling that this Ukraine situation was probably going on a little bit before a few months ago. I just have this feeling that if we look back into history, we might learn a little bit about what we can expect to go on happening there in the Ukraine. So again, tomorrow, Rick Rozoff's going to be on the show. Deborah Tavares on Thursday, probably one of the most well-documented researchers in terms of Agenda 21 and all of its many facets. I mean, she is a dynamo. I'm sure all you guys probably already know that already, but very excited to have her coming back onto the program. And then Friday, we're going to be talking to Andrew Gause again. He is an economist. He is a numismatic expert and a monetary historian, a very terrifically funny and entertaining guy, but not somebody who buys the hype in terms of, you know, our country having sound economics and things like that. So we'll get to the bottom of, we talk a lot about the Federal Reserve and the money system in our country being a Ponzi scheme. But I wonder if people really understand what that means and how long this scheme has been going on, because I want to break it down maybe Friday to some real simple terms so people can really understand exactly what's going on in our country. And we'll talk a little bit about some other things too, precious metals, some of the commodity markets, and just probably have a lot to talk about with Greece, because Greece is all over the news today. I'll tell you what, if it's not Russia, Ukraine or Greece, it may well as not exist on this planet right now, ladies and gentlemen, because that is dominating the headlines. I have to also talk about a really important topic here. And this is, okay, I really do my best to avoid talking about stuff that is absolutely horrible. I mean, there are things going on around us all the time, ladies and gentlemen, that I don't want to talk about. You know, I won't watch that movie Hostel because I recognize that the theme of that movie is that there's a market someplace where people can go and pay to torture people. And I look at a movie like that and I think, well, A, they're making a movie about it, so that's going to raise the awareness and the acceptability. But the fact that they're making a movie about it is telling me that there is a market there that exists, and in any place in the world where a market exists, there's going to be somebody to fill that need. And we talked quite a bit about this pedophile situation in the UK recently, stemming from Jeffrey Epstein here in the United States, a lot of contacts with Clinton, a lot of people coming out talking about many, many decades worth of information about some of the higher ups, some of the MPs there in the UK, some of the royal family and things like that. So just a crazy, crazy, crazy pedophile ring situation going on. But there has been a video that has come out recently, and I don't know if you guys have seen it. Again, I've tried not to talk about it because to me, there's absolutely nothing fake about this video or questionable about it at all. But it's from what I can gather, it's two young children. They're in the UK and they are talking about as candidly as I've ever heard anybody speak about being sexually molested, like as if exactly what you would expect from somebody who had been pushed so far you can tell that they have been conditioned not to react negatively to the things that they are describing. And the video is very long. The interviewer does a very good job. I'm not sure if he is a parent of one of these kids or what's going on, but they outline some of the most intense, disclosures that I've ever heard. And so there are other hosts on the show that are willing to talk about this stuff. And, I would be willing to talk about it, but it's just, again, it's just one of these issues that's just so hard to put your finger on. You really need to focus on just how evil some of these people are. Anyway, the point of my tirade here is that later this afternoon on Kev Baker's show, and if you guys aren't listening to Kev Baker's show, you're not doing yourselves a favor because, he is honestly one of the best hosts on TFR, absolutely outstanding. And the guests that he's got, and staying current with some of these topics that other people, you know, like myself are just hesitant to jump into because they're just so awful. He's brave enough to do that, ladies and gentlemen. So today at, 3 p.m. Pacific time, that's 6 o'clock Eastern time, he's going to be doing a show with Sabine McNeil. Sabine McNeil apparently is, somebody who works for, let me make sure I get this, completely accurate. She works for victimsunite.net. So she is representing the family, as this disclosure is coming out. And again, probably not going to be a real easy topic to listen to, but we need to get to the bottom of it because without addressing the problem, we can't find a solution. And if this woman who represents, as I said, victimsunite.net has information that they are stealing children off the streets there to use, in whatever kind of ritualistic behavior is going on, then that needs to be at the top of the news cycle. There's nothing else more important. This is our responsibility. You know, I'm one of these people that considers every child to be my child. It's just the way I consider to be, every pet to be my pet. If I'm at your house and you have a pet and it's fuzzy and it's within arm's reach, that's my dog as far as I'm concerned while I'm there. And I feel the same way about the kids. You know, all kids should be treated, with respect. It's unexcusable. Anyway, so Kev Baker's show this afternoon, I'll be tuning in for sure. I'll be in the chat room because this is something that I want to find out more about, the topic when it first came up. You know, it's just such a ridiculous, development that these poor kids could be exposed to so many people that are doing so many horrible things to them. And, to listen to them tell the story is absolutely a study in psychiatry because you can watch these kids talking about things that most people would never be able to talk about having experienced it one time. But you can tell that these kids have been conditioned to not react in any way negatively, to their experiences. And it comes through on the video. There's actually a vault of videos that are related to this. So I absolutely commend Kev over at the Kev Baker Show for doing this, and would really highly encourage people to tune in on this one. As I said, I'll be tuning in because I'd like to know what is going to be done about this. Because again, this video has only been out for about a week, and you know, I like to kind of sit off on things and make sure that they get vetted out as being accurate before we go. But it does look like this is an accurate depiction of two young people, very young, a boy and a girl, describing in amazing detail some of the experiences that they've. I'm talking about principals of their school, people who are in their community. It's just disgusting. So anyway, please tune in to Kev Baker's show this afternoon. I'll be there in the chat room and look forward to getting to the bottom of the truth behind this issue. And again, just one of these issues that's just absolutely disgusting and heartbreaking. But, you know, it's happening. It's happening right now, and it's been happening for freaking 25, 30 years, if not hundreds of years. And it's the depth of the depravity of these people that are running the show. Never ceases to amaze me. And I think that's where I'm at right now. I'm not shocked or surprised by anything. I'm disgusted by things pretty often, and this is one of them. But it does not surprise me anymore. Anyway, getting off that tirade, please again, check out Kev Baker's show this afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. Eastern time, coming at you from the UK. And, I agree in the chat room, OB. Let's castrate all of them. This is one of those situations where capital punishment, I think, totally pans out. Like, if it doesn't work as a deterrent, I don't really care. Let's just capture these people and remove them from society. This is, you know, because, again, we have a lot of – we're going to have Stuart Rhodes on today. We're talking about law enforcement, things like that. And a lot of people think I'm some kind of anarchist because I don't vote and I'd like to self-regulate and self-govern. But you have to understand that the legal system in our country and the fact that our country was founded as a democrat or as a constitutional republic, the whole concept of that is because your rights come from God and your rights are in your minority. You know, you're the smallest minority there is. Your minority rights are the rights that are supposed to be protected by the government. That's why it was codified that way. And minority rights coming from God, what we're talking about divine rights is your right not to be raped, to be, you know, safe in your person. Rape is rape, no matter what country you're in, no matter what language it is in. It's forced Congress. I don't care what you call it. And that violates your inherent divine rights as we understand them. So, you know, again, that's the concept here. So when people say, oh, JD wants a lawless system, well, that's not true. The laws are actually set up beautifully right now. We just need to apply them to crimes with victims. That's the entire concept, because our minority rights are supposed to be protected. And I'm sure that Stuart Rhodes will back me up on that when he comes on to the show later on. Anyways, okay, have I wasted enough time? I think I probably have. We know about the guests this week. We know Stuart Rhodes is going to be on. Okay, let's talk about the news, because there are a lot of things going on around the planet right now. It was not a light news cycle yesterday, so let's quickly talk. This story broke this morning, and it's already kind of being refuted by Sweden and Finland, but it does appear potentially that Sweden has agreed to Russian demands not to land fighter jets in Estonia during the coming military exercises in the Baltic region. This was according to a Swedish newspaper. As I said, it was broken this morning. And they have said that a memorandum from the Swedish Foreign Ministry obtained by a newspaper, which is Expressen there, again, a Swedish newspaper, reportedly states, quote unquote, that no Swedish planes will land in Estonian territory. And the same now has been applied to Finland. So what they're saying right now is that this fracturing of the European Union and the NATO coalition is continuing, because people over there are they live right next to Russia. You know, Sweden and Finland can't pick up their whole country and just move to the United States if stuff goes bad. And you know what? Thinking about the fact that Sweden was pretty embroiled with Russia. Remember this summer with the infamous submarine hunt in Stockholm's archipelago? There were supposedly like four different submarines operating in the area at one time. So Sweden already kind of is like, okay, if we mess around with Russia and we can't find their submarines and we know that there were four of them just off our coast, maybe this isn't somebody that we really want to be pushing more sanctions on. Maybe we don't really want global war. Because Russia has resources and they are looking more and more sound in terms of economics as the days go by. We got a big breaking story in that respect in the economic news today, so we'll get over to that in a little while. But again, Russia looking better and better, Russia looking like they're going to probably end up bailing Greece out. And again, now we see more people there, Holland. We see Merkel from Germany. These people don't want war on their doorsteps. So regardless of how much the United States is fomenting at the mouth to try and get more weapons and things over there. I don't know if it's going to happen without another false flag attack. And I say another because obviously MH17 was not as successful as they would have hoped it had been, because the black boxes have been in London for like 4 months now, right? There shouldn't be any. If I was Francois Holland or I was Angela Merkel, and I know that my neighbor has a propensity for shooting, you know, civilian planes out of the sky or arming other people to shoot civilian planes out of the sky, I doubt it would be very difficult to bolster some national support to, you know, continue sanctions, to continue this whole NATO rhetoric against Russia. But that's not what we're seeing. We haven't seen anything from the MH17. Nobody's even talking about it again. It's like the plane didn't exist. 270 people gone from the face of the earth to try and get us into war with Russia, and it didn't work. So what are they going to do next is my next question, I guess, because there's nothing but a ginormous false flag event coming, you know, down into Ukraine that's going to get anything done here. But anyway, the fracturing of NATO continuing. Again, we're seeing Sweden and Finland. Although I do have to say that the Swedish Foreign Secretary Wallström late yesterday did actually deny this. She's saying that the exercise is under the remit of the Swedish Air Force and Defense Department, so that really they should be the people who are asked about the exercise. But again, kind of either way, we're in a gray area right now with whether or not the rest of NATO really wants to go forth with these big Baltic region, you know, drills that they're trying to do. It's again a show of force against Russia. And why would you want to be showing force against somebody who really has won at this point? I don't know. But the EU has imposed fresh sanctions now against Russia. This broke yesterday by adding 19 individuals and 9 entities to the asset freeze list and accusing them of undermining or threatening Ukraine's independence. So this new list published on the official Journal of European Communities at about 8:30 GMT last night and placed restrictive measures on the newly sanctioned individuals, which include 3 top brass Russian military officials, deputy defense minister, and the first deputy defense minister army. Let's see, what's his name? Bakken. And at the head of the operation directorate as well. So more people who are high up, probably needing to travel back and forth between Ukraine, are now not being allowed to do that. You know what I don't really understand is how the EU can impose EU-wide travel bans against countries that, you know, come from outside of the EU. That doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me, but again, that's what's going on. More sanctions against Russia, more sanctions against entities in Russia and people in Russia to prevent them from traveling to accomplish any of their goals. So again, hedging our bets towards war at this point, and I don't like it. Also, talking about Ukraine right now, the troops there, the Ukrainian troops and the rebels in the country's east, blaming each other right now for sporadic ceasefire violations. Both sides say they only respond to attacks launched by adversary forces and question the possibility right now of the heavy artillery withdrawal, which is one of the facets of this supposed ceasefire that hopefully is – well, it's tentative at best right now, I guess. But the ceasefire, according to the eastern Ukraine officials there, is holding right now. This is the OSCE mission leader there. Ertugrul, man, that's a tough name. Ertugrul Apikin. He is the OSCE mission head there in eastern Ukraine. He is saying right now the ceasefire is largely holding. There have been one major exception in I wish I could speak Ukrainian. I'm sorry, guys. But this is one of the major towns. It's not Donetsk. It's not Lugansk. Debaltseve is a town with an estimated 5,000 Ukrainian task tanks remaining trapped there. This is that situation where the Ukrainian forces from Kiev came in and they were essentially surrounded while they were trying to take the airport near Debaltseve. And so they are still surrounded at this point. Now, part of this peace agreement is to allow these guys safe passage, a green corridor to go back to western side of the country right now. But so far, Kiev has even refused to acknowledge that it has military forces trapped there. So we don't really know how this situation is going to pan out right now. But again, what have we seen today? We've seen more sanctions from the EU. We see the ceasefire tentatively holding right now, but not necessarily. We're kind of at a deadlock right now. They're still trying to figure out if they're going to be able to withdraw the heavy artillery weapons. We're still trying to figure out how to get these 5,000 Ukrainian troops back out of Donbass, or however you pronounce that. And so there's still lots going on there right now. So we'll keep an eye on that. And then in another follow-up story, the Ukraine Parliament has said that they are ready to do away with supplies of Russian gas by increasing domestic oil and gas exploration and getting more from Europe. Again, this was the Prime Minister Yatsenyuk saying this yesterday. So, you know, we basically destabilized the country. We moved in with a junta that's now pro-Western needs, and we got Joe Biden's son working on the largest natural gas board of directors over there now. So is it surprising that they're going to move forward with developing the natural gas in the East? No, of course not. That's exactly what this whole thing has been about since the get-go. The trouble is there's still probably a million people on the east side of the country there that would rather be left alone and aren't really part of this whole extermination program. We've already seen a million people displaced back to Russia. So I can imagine that, again, United States hedging its bets towards war, even as EU support of NATO starts to seemingly starting to fracture. We still see, you know, this plan for development of shale oil and development of drilling and things like that. So there's money to be made, ladies and gentlemen. There's money and resources to be made, and they were ripe for the picking. So we'll see what happens going forward. But that's the plan right now. They're looking for independence from Russian oil sometime by 2017, it looks like. So a long, slow rolling train crash at this point. Okay, let's move on to some more positive news, or at least a little bit more positive news. The Greece finance minister has come out with some pretty bold statements here over the last couple of days. Obviously, we've talked about the meeting between the Greece finance department and the EU and the Troika and all that really kind of falling apart yesterday to a pretty substantial extent. But so right now, Greece is still playing hardball. The Greek finance minister there saying that they are not willing to play negotiating games with the EU. And he is, again, unwilling to agree to more of the same austerity medicine is essentially what he is saying. So he goes on to say Greece is determined not to be treated as a debt colony that should suffer what it must. The principle of the greatest austerity for the most depressed economy would be quaint if it did not cause so much unnecessary suffering. So this sounds like a guy who gets it right now. And the finance minister called the talks between Greece and the EU finance ministers and central bankers, which were resumed yesterday, they called them a turning point for Europe's unfolding experiment with monetary union. So, again, that kind of puts the entire European Union in perspective in terms of what the new finance minister of Greece thinks will be the result of these, you know, continuing talks between Greece and the EU finance ministers there. Greece is one of the main players in the Eurozone debt crisis. It began to unravel in 2009. And showed a lot of weakness in all of the 18 member euro currencies, really. And the currency, which began circulating in 1999, was meant to make the EU a financial bloc to rival the US. But by banding together, no individual country of the union was safeguarded against the woes of another. And in 2009, worries that Greece would default on its debt forced the EU to bail out the economy, and two bailouts were paid, 2010 and 2014, for a total of 240 billion euros. And the new Syriza-led Greek government does not agree to the Eurozone bailout under the same constraints as the former government. So I love it. In total, Greece right now is more than 317 billion euros in debt, which is more than 175% its annual gross domestic product. Finances currently are dwindling. Greece needs to negotiate with EU policymakers by the 28th of February in order to receive the next tranche of bailout funds. And Athens and Brussels have been embroiled in financial rescue package talks since the government won the snap election back in January on the 25th, with the promise of ending austerity. So Syriza instead, trying to renegotiate its bailout with its Troika leaders, the International Monetary Fund, the EU Central Bank, and the European Commission. And the Greek government is asking for more time to negotiate. They want a six-month bridging loan, not an extension of the old program, which has kept Greece in recession for 6 years. But they do go on to say that no red lines will be crossed, no games will be played, and Greece just wants to start growing again. So again, we're in that weird gray area right now where the people of Greece have stood up, and, you know, there's some ancillary effects just from that standing up. A lot of people around the world are expecting that more Europeans are going to be rising up. We've seen it in Italy. So again, I think this is the death knell for the EU because, you know, Russia has them in this checkmate position right now because Greece does not have to come through with anything for the EU as long as Russia is going to be there to back them up. And I do believe that is the plan right now. So we'll keep an eye on things again. The talks did apparently break down completely yesterday. I think the last word from the EU representatives were that they were willing to come back to the table if Greece changes its tune. But apparently the tune that Greece is singing right now does not sit in the right key for the people at the European Troika. So it doesn't look really like they're going to move very far in terms of the negotiations that are going on right now. Okay, I want to jump over to the UK right now because I know there's some people from the UK listening right now, and this story bothers the hell out of me, guys. Selfridges, the biggest store there in the UK, the biggest department store, has put in those stupid anti-homeless spikes, guys. The anti-homeless spikes, they were placed up outside a Manchester department store, making it impossible for homeless people to sleep there. I don't support this. I think this is absolutely disgusting. And this is the second time that these inhumane spikes have sparked controversy in the UK there. Last June, the metal spikes caused a stir on social media when they were placed out of luxury apartments outside of London. And then following the public outrage, the London mayor, Boris Johnson, ordered the ugly, self-defeating, and stupid fixtures to be removed from the buildings. The spikes outside of the London apartment were removed following the protest and a petition which reached over 130,000 signatures. So right now, furious campaigners launched a fresh petition against the intimidating spikes outside of the Manchester department store. Of course, the company says that it has nothing to do with trying to prevent homeless people. They're trying to prevent people from smoking outside, which doesn't really make a lot of sense. But I think one of the signatories from Manchester says it best. He says, if a company of this size and wealth can offer no better contribution to Manchester's homeless problem than to build themselves a fortress, I won't be spending any of my money there. So maybe all you UK kids out there, maybe we should be boycotting Selfridges. I don't know. Tell me what you guys think. 3 minute break. We'll be right back, guys. More news after this.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. Hemp U.S. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
The Kev Baker Show.
Monday through Friday. Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the radio show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We are just a half an hour away from Mr. Stuart Rhodes. It's going to be a very good discussion. Appreciate you guys all hanging out. Appreciate you guys sharing the website, redpillreports.com, with your friends and family. And also appreciate you guys sharing the show with your friends and family. That's how this whole network gets spread around, and the listenership is growing. People in the chat room seem to love it, and I can't tell you guys, listeners out there, how much I appreciate everything you guys are doing to help support the network and help support the show. Just love, love, love the network. Love having you guys in the chat room. Anyway, we're going to jump back into the news right now. I've got one more international story I wanted to cover here real quick. The Iranian intelligence minister has now claimed that Osama bin Laden died from an illness before the raid on his compound. And apparently Iran has the documents to prove it. Now, of course, you know, a lot of us that have listened to the show for a long time and have been paying attention to what's going on in the world, probably not really surprised by this disclosure. But it's surprising now that Iran, given the fact that, you know, we're in these high-level negotiations with them about nuclear development and things like that, that they would essentially go ahead and throw out an ace card like this and say, hey, by the way, American citizens, you're being lied to completely, 100%. And not only, we could understand you guys maybe being a little skeptical because we are Iran and we understand that you guys have been beaten down by propaganda about us. But here's the deal. We have the documents. We know the guy died. We have credible information, according to them, that bin Laden died some time ago of a disease. And he said this on the sidelines of a cabinet meeting on Sunday, and it was quoted by the ISNA news agency. He goes on to say, if the U.S. military and intelligence apparatus have really arrested or killed bin Laden, why don't they show the United States citizens his body? Why have they thrown his corpse into the sea? Again, so you've got now a Muslim asking about this whole quote-unquote, you know, Muslim burial ceremony or whatever. So anyway, the Iranian intelligence minister there saying now that it's a PR campaign. It was created to divert the attention of the American citizens from some of the domestic problems that we were having, like the fragile state of the U.S. economy. But again, interesting now that Iran has come out and said not only did we not go and kill Osama bin Laden, but they have all the documents necessary to prove that he died of a disease a while ago. So there you go. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Not surprising. Again, very few things surprise me anymore, and especially when it comes to the agenda that's going on around us all the time. Let's talk about a very late-breaking story. This happened last night, and I'm thinking you guys might like this. A Texas governor, his name's Greg Abbott, he won yesterday, guys. Big-time story here. Won a federal injunction against Obama's amnesty executive order. Yes, this broke last night at about 10 o'clock. He broke it on Twitter because that's how all the big news gets spread. But a federal judge just granted him his request to halt Obama's executive amnesty order nationwide. He is we're waiting for some more updates on this. But again, about 10:30 last night, following message was posted on Abbott's official Twitter account saying, breaking, a federal judge has granted my request to halt Obama's executive amnesty order nationwide. More later. Abbott filed suit against Obama's executive order early in December, with the state of Texas as the lead plaintiff amongst 17 other states that sued over the order as well. He said that the order was less about changing immigration policies and more about an abuse of power by the executive branch. And a key piece of the judge's reasoning was that the order fails to comply with the Administrative Procedure Act, which is part of the checks and balances of our government that's supposed to keep presidents from becoming tyrants. And apparently Barack missed that message. But again, good news if you guys guys are anti this whole ridiculous amnesty thing, that there has now been a Fifth Circuit judge there in Texas has now filed an injunction against it nationwide. So we'll keep an eye on that and see if that gets appealed and struck down. Of course, it'll be appealed, but we'll see how well that goes. But at least we're making some progress on that front. This is a story from the New York Times. I don't know. You guys, you know, might want to take this with a grain of salt. Again, we know who owns the New York Times and we know who all their advertising executives are and things like that. But the CIA right now, working with American troops since the occupation of Iraq, reportedly purchased nerve agent rockets from a secretive Iraqi seller, part of previously undisclosed efforts to ensure that old chemical weapons remaining in Iraq did not fall into the hands of terrorists or militant groups, according to current and former American officials. So this extraordinary arms purchase plan, which was known as Operation Avarice, began in 2005 and continued into 2006, and the American military deemed it a non-proliferation success. It led to the United States acquiring and destroying at least 400 Borac rockets, one of the internationally condemned chemical weapons that Saddam Hussein Batiste government manufactured in the 1980s. Not true. He purchased it from Ronald Reagan in the 1980s. But anyway, they were apparently not accounted for by the United Nations inspectors mandated after the 91 Persian Gulf War. The effort was run out of a CIA station in Baghdad in collaboration with the Army's 203rd Military Intelligence Battalion and teams of chemical defense and explosive ordnance disposal troops, officials and veterans of the units said. Many rockets were in poor condition. Some were empty or held non-lethal liquid, according to officials, but others did contain the nerve agent sarin. And analysis was actually pretty surprising, and it showed that the stock of the nerve agent there was actually more pure than the intelligence community had expected it to be because of the age of the stock. And so a New York Times investigation published in October found that the military had recovered thousands of old chemical warheads and shells in Iraq, that the Americans and Iraqis had been wounded by them as well, but the government kept much of this information secret from the public and the troops as well. So here's at least a little bit of disclosure coming out talking about the fact that United States government and the military kept information about these toxic substances that were over in Iraq, not only that we sold them before we decided that we didn't want them to have them anymore, but also the stuff that we use there, you know, when we talk about the depleted uranium rounds and things like that. All of that information was kept away from the troops. So that's pretty important. That's at least a little bit of a disclosure coming out in this article. But these munitions that they recovered, again, remnants of an Iraqi special weapons program that was apparently abandoned long before 2003 invasion. And they turned up sporadically during the American occupation in buried caches as part of improvised bombs or on the black market. The potency of the sarin samples, again, from the purchases, as well as tightly held assessments about risks the munitions posed, buttress veterans' claims that during the war, the military did not share important intelligence about battlefield perils with those at risk or maintain an adequate medical system for treating victims of chemical exposure. That's not surprising. It's surprising that they would put that in a New York Times article, but that is, again, what we know to be true. They don't care at all about the vets. They didn't even tell them what kind of weapons these people were using. So again, but as far as these purchases go, just wanted to point this out again. They were made from a sole Iraqi source. So apparently they were made from one guy. They bought them from one guy who was allegedly very eager to sell his stock. Wonder why. And the amount of money the United States paid for the rockets, not publicly known, and neither are the affiliations of the seller. So we don't really know who we bought them from, where this guy got them from, or how much we spent on them. But we can say definitively, without a doubt, that they were there, apparently, according to the New York Times. Anyway, take all that with a grain of salt. Potentially a clandestine recovery operation being carried out by the CIA, and your tax dollars paid for it. So there you go. That's what's going on. We now own a whole bunch of chemical weapons, and hopefully they've been destroyed. I don't know. We're going to talk a little bit more about this with Stuart Rhodes today, but I wanted to just touch on this. There has been a recent NRA report from their Institute for Legislative Action. Apparently right now the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives and the Obama administration are attempting to ban ammunition for the AR-15S and other .223 caliber general purpose rifles. How they're going about doing this is a little bit Well, it's tricky. We'll just say that. They're using the normal tricky stuff, changing language, making things broad and whatever. But I don't want to get into this right now. I'm going to talk about it with Stuart because I'm sure he'll know more about this issue than I do. So, we'll save that, but just on keeping you guys in the loop on what's going on, that right now the, BATFE is attempting to push through some legislation that will eventually ban ammunition for the AR-15. So that's not a good thing, and we need to keep an eye on that. So we'll get back into that in just a few minutes with our discussion with Stuart Rhodes. The FAA, we're kind of moving over into some techie stuff here, but the FAA has finally unveiled the preliminary guidelines for the use of small commercial drones in the country. They did this just over the weekend, and the draft regulation prohibits the use of unmanned drones outside of the sight of a pilot. This is that's a pretty big stipulation here. They also propose rules that drones can only fly during the day if they weigh up to 55 pounds, stay below 500 feet, and fly less than 100 miles an hour. Other restrictions include that the drone must be in the pilot's sight at all times and must be operated by a person not younger than 17 who has passed an aeronautics test. Imagine that, going over to Radio Shack. Well, Radio Shack won't be here anymore, but going over to Best Buy or whatever and buying a drone, and now you've got to go pass an aeronautics test and get a license. Man, I'll tell you what. If they, so much freedom in this country. It's just out of control. Remember, you have to have a license to cut hair in this country, ladies and gentlemen. So anybody who wants to talk to me about freedom, I don't want to hear it. But again, night flights prohibited under these proposed regulations. Right now, FAA has, again, just proposed these regulations. You've got 60 days to go to the FAA's website and challenge these during the 60-day comment period. So I would recommend everybody go there and tell these people that this is just not going to work. I would imagine that Amazon isn't going to like this because, remember, they're trying to come up with this whole drone delivery system. Obviously, that's going to be remote piloted. You're not going to be able to have somebody in a line of sight with that drone the whole time. So there's probably going to be some backlash to these proposals by some big business. And I think we should all be, backlashing against them as well. Oh, man. So much to talk about. I was going to say there's an article that's not in today's news. It was in a couple of days' news. But there's actually a company that is designing a system for no-go zones for drones. And what they're hoping to do is to hard code drones with coordinates of places they're not allowed to go, essentially like the White House. You could build a drone and it would be hard-coded into all of the drone softwares that were, put out there, so that if you tried to fly your drone into that area, it would essentially hit like a wall. So that, again, we can use technology to solve some of these problems. But if the FAA has its way, I wouldn't imagine that it would be too long until we saw, timers on your drones so you cannot fly them at night, things like that. So anyway, that might be coming down the pike here pretty soon. Let's talk quickly. I'm going to move away from some of the other national news here. There is a lot of stuff at redpillreports.com. So if you guys get an opportunity to go there, check out the show section. You'll see a whole lot. Oh, well, someone in the chat room suggesting that the laws will not apply to big business. I keep forgetting we're not part of the elite club. Maybe you should incorporate everybody out there. We'll incorporate and then fly your drones under your LCC and then you get around that rule. I don't know. It's probably a good point though. Checking out the markets here real quick. Happy days still here right now, apparently, ladies and gentlemen. The Dow down just a touch today, but it pretty looks flat. As far as I'm concerned, we're just about 18,000, 17,9 and 9,7. The S&P down at 209.1. So well above our $2,000 mark there. Let's see. Gold taken a major step back today. We are right at $1,205 for an ounce of gold. Silver, $1,628. Again, about a 5% decline in silver today. That is absolutely crazy. And crude oil still sitting right about $52.42 right now. So that's what's going on there. Let's check out real quick the Forex and give you guys the Bitcoin. Up a little bit today, almost 2 points or 2% up today, $236.90. We'll get you a Bitcoin and the euro to US dollar still at 113.95. So staying pretty steady there, about that. Let's see here. Moving on to, the economic aspects of Greece. I got to cover this story. Greece did reject a proposal by the eurozone partners yesterday that it should accept a 6-month extension of its international bailout program while sticking to the terms of its agreements with lenders, casting talks into its debt into disarray. That's essentially what happened. I mentioned that earlier, but I wanted to talk about it from an economic standpoint. But again, those talks completely folded and caved yesterday. So the EU officials said the talks were over, really, unless Athens decides to change its mind again after this leftist-led government won power last month. And a Greek official said the finance minister there had rebuffed a statement put to him at a Eurozone finance ministers meeting in Brussels that spoke of Greece extending the current program. So he goes on to say some people's insistence on the Greek government implementing the bailout is unreasonable and cannot be accepted. Those who keep returning to this issue are wasting their time. Under no such circumstances will there be a deal today. So very harsh, staunch words coming out of the new Greece finance minister there, and that's about as big of a middle finger as you could possibly give to the Troika, as far as I'm concerned. So do they have are they hedging their bets? Do they have an ace in the hole? Are we looking over at Russia? I think so. Hey, I wanted to talk too about the fact that a lot of these we've got major runs on the Greek banks, right? That's their value of their currencies in the toilet right now. But we talked a little bit last week about the UK Mint coming out with some indications that a lot of the Greek citizens were ordering directly from the UK Mint to get their gold. But it was kind of a weird story, and I covered it quickly, and I didn't really get an opportunity to look into it. So I wanted to look into it a little bit yet. And as especially right now, gold, this doesn't make any sense to me that gold has fallen again today with all of the turmoil in the market. We're not seeing any safe haven buying. The Greek situation isn't really resolving. But again, we're not seeing the price of gold here, at least reflected against the dollar, going up. And that just confuses the heck out of me. We'll have to talk to Andrew about this here on Friday. But here's the deal. So the Greek citizens really right now are not looking forward to any kind of solution, and they've been buying gold en masse. And so when we talked about the UK Mint saying that they had noticed a pretty remarkable increase of Greek people buying coins from there, the Central Bank of Greece in that same article had said that it had not noticed any demand for an increase in gold coins. All right, so let's talk about that for a second, because that seems to be a disparity, right? If they're, why would they be going all the way to the UK or ordering online or however it is that they're ordering these coins? So again, let's delve into what the central bank's actual statements are looking at. Let's actually look at their numbers here. According to the official numbers from the Greek Central Bank, it sold almost 5,900 golden British sovereigns in January, while it sold a total of 7,857 coins in the last quarter of 2014. So let's draw those numbers out just a second. If we extrapolate the fact that 5,849 coins were just bought in January, we would end up with quarterly sales of 17,500 coins. That is twice the sales from the last quarter in 2014. That is a 123% increase. But the central bank, again, saying it hasn't seen any noticeable increase. Maybe their definitions of noticeable and our definitions of noticeable are a little different. But I see 123% increase quarter to quarter as being significant. So there is some safe haven buying going on in Greece right now. Maybe would be the time for all of us to follow suit. And Kitco today saying that gold going to remain pretty volatile ahead of the Greece talks. Again, going to be going up and down. And I do suspect we'll get some more information about how well Greece is going to be moving forward with the EU today. Let's talk about Russia here for a second. We had an article last week, I want to say, where Russia, we were talking about their new SWIFT system, or the SWIFT replacement system, which is their international money, you know, exchange system that connects all their banks, right? They have been working for the last 6 months of getting their, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Their SWIFT system. But it's not a SWIFT system, because SWIFT is a name. It's a different type of SWIFT system. Anyway, they've been working hard for like 6 months. And last week, we had the article that five different banks had finally been hooked up. Everything had been tested and it was working. Okay. Today in Russia, currently, 91 domestic credit institutions have now been incorporated into the new Russian financial system. Again, this thing analogous of the SWIFT system, the international banking system. So we went from 5, which obviously worked out pretty good, to 91. Okay. So again, this is the kind of system that somebody would have to, I don't know, circumvent international sanctions, right? Let's say the BRICS bank gets all lined up with their own international SWIFT system. How exactly are we going to be putting these sanctions on these guys now if they have international banking systems that are connected to China and Iran and are completely separate from the EU banking system? They don't. There's not going to be any, you know, the sanctions go away. So why do you think they're doing this? This is exactly what they're doing. They're de-dollarizing and they're getting out from under the hegemony of the IMF. And I could not I could not support them more at this point because I think that we as people on the planet, we're ready for a break. I'm tired of being a tax slave. I'm over it. I'm over it right now. But again, 91 domestic credit institutions now across Russia being incorporated into their new Russian financial system. These are going to be the big banks. They're going to be the big players. And so again, we're going to see them sidestepping these sanctions. And again, so we are losing the grip on Russia, what little grip we even had in the first place. We are in prime false flag territory at this point, ladies and gentlemen, to be blamed on Russia. I would also be looking for something to be blamed on Iran at this point. Man, I'll tell you what, prime territory. Let's do some good news here. Colorado, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but they legalized marijuana last year, right? And under the guise of taxation, and they were hoping then to make a whole bunch of money and support some of their local infrastructure and schools and things like that. But how successful was it? Here's the question. Right now, legal marijuana was a $700 million industry in Colorado last year, according to the Washington Post analysis of recently released tax data from the state's Department of Revenue. In 2014, Colorado retailers sold $386 million of medical marijuana and $313 million for purely recreational purposes. These two segments of the market generated $63 million in tax revenue with an additional $13 million collected in licenses and fees. The total economic impact on the state's marijuana industry is likely far greater, however, because these figures do not include retail sales of products related to marijuana, like rolling papers and vaporizers and things like that. And again, if you're in Colorado right now, and there is a gold rush on, and you are not investing in the pick and shovel business, you are not doing yourself a favor, ladies and gentlemen. We are on the verge of a billion-dollar industry, is what they're projecting next year. $1 billion retail market just in the state of Colorado alone. Pick and shovel business, ladies and gentlemen. That's all I'm going to say. If you are looking for something to invest in right now, getting involved with that would be very, very smart. Okay, a little science and tech news here real quick. We talked about that major breach at a whole bunch of banks that started back in like 2013. Okay, the figure that we had yesterday was $300 million taken from about 100 banks. They were in Russia, some in Japan, Netherlands, Switzerland. Well, Kaspersky has come out and updated their figures right now. New figure, there's two points to make. First of all, they don't know if it's stopped. They don't know if it's still continuing right now, this attack. And B, $1 billion. $1 billion has been stolen now from the banks as of this morning, through this super shady hacker network kind of thing. So again, the way that they caught this, the way that they figured this out, was that an ATM in the Ukraine actually started just spitting out cash and there wasn't anybody there to collect the cash. So essentially, that's, what is going on. These people were tapping into ATM networks and then they would call somebody and say, okay, this ATM is ready to spit out some cash. Make sure you're there to pick it up. Well, that little network didn't really pan out in the Ukraine. So nobody showed up as this ATM was spitting out cash to random walkers. And so, that obviously was a pretty big giveaway to this whole attack. It was first reported by the New York Times and Kaspersky Lab, which is in Russia there, has been investigating the attack since then. But now they're saying, in the entirety of this event that we're looking at about $1 billion being taken, which is just an incredible amount of money. I want to talk a little bit too about this, an interesting, well, let's see here. We got 4 minutes left. Somebody in the chat room, you want to talk about science stuff or health stuff? Somebody hit me up. Science or health? Science or health? That's the choice. That's the choice. That's the choice. That's the choice. Okay, we're sticking with tech. Real quick, I got to talk about this story too because this just broke this morning. Russian researchers now are exposing the NSA's secret weapon, an outrage at a program that enables America to spy on every home computer in the world has now been uncovered. So the NSA apparently figured out how to hide spying and sabotage software deep within hard drives, according to cyber researchers and former operatives. The group said it found personal computers in 30 countries infected with one or more of the spying programs. The most infections were seen in Iran, followed by Russia, Pakistan, Afghanistan, China, Mali, Syria, Yemen, and Algeria. The infection started back in 2001, but increased drastically in 2008. Wasn't somebody elected in 2008? I can't remember. The tools are designed to run on computers even when they are not connected to the internet, and even the makers of some of the hard drives affected are unaware that these programs have been embedded. The spies made a technological breakthrough by figuring out how to lodge malicious software in the obscure code called firmware that launches every time a computer is turned on. So, Yes, the NSA in it up to their eyeballs, ladies and gentlemen, and Russian researchers now coming out saying that every single home computer in the world is hard-coded in their hard drives, and most of the manufacturers of the hard drives are completely unaware that this is even going on. But the NSA apparently solved this problem back in 2001, and here we are, 2015, in it up to our eyeballs with the NSA, ladies and gentlemen. So apparently, again, Russia coming out and saying every single computer in the world potentially now affected by one or more of these malicious programs. And I'll tell you, Kaspersky says it surpasses anything known in terms of complexity and sophistication of techniques, and that it's been active for almost two decades. Wow. So all of us here talking about using this platform or that platform to try and be encrypted and how important that is, you know, it might all be for naught at this point, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know. I really don't know. I really don't care, because to be perfectly honest, somebody from the NSA could show up at my house and I'm going to tell him the exact same thing that I would tell him over the air. It doesn't make any difference. You don't have any authority over my life. You threaten me like a sovereign. We're going to have problems, buddy. That's, you know, if you want to get buried under my garden shed, this is the way to do it. Any of you people, alphabet agencies, I don't care who you think you work for, you don't have authority over me. So I hate to break that to you, but I've withdrawn my consent. So if you want to come have a personal talk with me in the house, I'll put the kettle on. You guys come on over. We'll have a little chat. Okay. I want to talk about this one thing. Also this development that I think is pretty interesting here. No, I'm going to skip that. I'm going to bait it up. I'm going to set it up, and then I'm going to skip it. That's what we're going to do. Oh, I got to talk about this. Okay. Did GCHQ spy on you guys? Do you want to find out? There's an easier way now to discover whether the UK intelligence services legally obtained your information from their US colleagues. The only caveat is that you have to tell a campaign group, as well as the UK government communications headquarters, your details to find out. But I did this. I think this is cool. So there's a civil rights group. It's called Privacy International. They have now launched a website to allow anyone in the world to ask whether GCHQ has illegally spied on them. If you go to redpillreports.com and get into the show section, you will be able to find this article, and there's a link to this website. You only really require to give them your name and your phone number at this point. They may come back and ask for more information, but essentially they're going to file a Freedom of Information request with GCHQ for you and then report back to you whether or not you have been spied on via your phone. I love it. Do it. I think get involved. Who cares? They've already got your information. We know every computer in the world has been hijacked by the NSA. So, you know, what difference does it make if they have your info now? Anyway, 3-minute break, you guys. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be right back with Stuart Rhodes. Keep it right here, ladies and gentlemen.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
This is the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
No.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break, and thank all of you guys out there making this part of your daily dose of deprogramming, and all of you guys joining in the chat room. I just cannot thank you guys enough for being in there. Of course, today, a very special guest, Mr. Stuart Rhodes of the Oath Keepers organization. If you guys have questions or comments about the interview, anything like that you want to lay into the chat room, I'll try and steward them across and get them asked. But for those of you guys who don't know Mr. Stuart Rhodes, let me do a quick introduction of him. He's obviously, of course, the founder and the president of the Oath Keepers organization. You can go to oathkeepers.org, a beautiful, beautiful website. There's also a link to his website from redpillreports.com, coincidentally, because it's one of the only organizations out there that is actually working for solutions, and one of those two organizations, between the Oath Keepers and the CSPOA, I mean, these are the answers, ladies and gentlemen, so we really want to support them as much as possible. I want to encourage you guys to go to oathkeepers.com and support them, share that website, because again, it's astounding to me how many people are unfamiliar with Oath Keepers. So we're going to talk about that for just a second here in a minute. But I want to give you guys a little bit more background on Stuart. He actually graduated magna cum laude from the University of Nevada in Las Vegas, where his honor thesis was focused on the political theory of James Madison. And while attending UNLV, Stuart actually taught rape prevention and street crime survival as a volunteer instructor for the UNLV Jean Nidetch Women's Center. He also worked as a professional sculptor and as a Nevada State Certified Concealed Carry Firearms Instructor. While practicing law in Montana, he actually also served as a volunteer firefighter. And after founding the Oath Keepers, Stuart has appeared in dozens of nationally syndicated radio shows, scores of other radio shows across the country, and has appeared on MSNBC's Hardball with Chris Matthews, on Fox News' The Factor with Bill O'Reilly, and on CNN's Special Report. I do want to also mention that he graduated from the Yale Law School in 2004, where his paper, Solving the Puzzle of Enemy Combatant Status, won Yale judges William E. Miller's prize for the best paper on the Bill of Rights. So, again, this is a gentleman who is very well-versed in the Constitution, ladies and gentlemen, and is very aware of some of the problems that are going on around the country right now in terms of law enforcement's, and their interaction with citizens and civilians. So that's in the vein of why we would like to bring him back onto the program as often as possible, because not only is his organization, the Oath Keepers, working hard bolster support of sheriffs and peace officers across the country, but he does a lot of other things on the side to really fight for our freedoms and to try and get us back to our republic. So again, very proud to know the man and very thankful for Mr. Stuart Rhodes to be joining us on the redpillreports.com today. Thank you very much for joining us on the show today, sir.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure to have you at any time. I mentioned this.
One thing you left out, I wanted to mention, I served as a paratrooper long before I took an oath. As an attorney, I took an oath as a young paratrooper in the Army, which is what matters to me more than anything else.
Right. I wish I had had that in my bio. I apologize for missing that as a very important detail. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about just the Oath Keepers overall. I mentioned this to you earlier, and you were – more enthused by the news than I would have imagined that you were. But I was talking to a good friend of mine the other day, very smart young lady. She's a teacher, very intelligent. And I mentioned to her that you were going to be on the show. Stuart Rhodes, Oath Keepers, is going to be great. And just a complete blank stare, had no idea who you were, had no idea what Oath Keepers was. And I was like, wow, that's bad news to me. But you didn't really take it as bad news.
No, I think it is good news. It means we haven't reached everybody yet, which means that, you know, we haven't reached saturation. If we had reached everyone in the country and then we hadn't seen any changes, then we'd be in trouble. Mm-hmm. So we still have room to go.
I agree with that. And after talking to you about it, that does make more sense to me. But let's just talk about the Oath Keepers in general. Who are you guys? How did the organization start? What was the motivation that led you to start in the organization? And what is it specifically, you know, who's your target audience? What is it specifically that you are trying to accomplish with the Oath Keepers organization, sir?
What we are is an association of both current serving and former military, police, and first responders, like firefighters, EMTs. And the mission of the organization is primarily to reach out to all of those who took the oath, whether they're still current service or former, and remind them of the oath they took to defend the Constitution and of their duties and responsibilities. And they're, you know, they're of course different for those who are still in current service versus us veterans. The guys in current service, number one way that they defend the Constitution is by refusing unconstitutional orders. It can't be done without them. No violations of your rights can happen without the guys at the tip of the spear. It takes the police officers, federal law enforcement, military, National Guard. In the end, the bad guys in political office cannot affect your life. They can pass all the laws they want, but who enforces them?
Right.
So there's a situation we see is that we have to have people like Sheriff London there in New Mexico who are saying, you know, no, we're not doing this in my county when he's got the IRS trying to sell someone's home out from under them without due process of law. Mm-hmm. So we want to see law enforcement and military in this country understand the oath obligation to judge for themselves the constitutionality of an order they've been given and be willing to say no. Like, a big wake-up call for a lot of us was Hurricane Katrina. And during Hurricane Katrina, you saw nationalized police from all over the country and National Guard and even current serving Standing Army, 82nd Airborne, obeying unconstitutional orders to disarm peaceable Americans who were simply trying to protect their own property.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big eye-opener. Because, well, you know, some folks might say, well, how dare you question whether or not we're going to follow, you know, unconstitutional orders. Of course we won't. And I can point to Katrina and say, look at that, exhibit A.
I would point
thousands
out
thousands of them doing it.
What about Lieutenant Vance from the Sandy Hook situation? There was a woman that called him talking about, you know, whether or not they were going to go out and enforce the gun confiscation laws if it did come to that in New York. And we're talking about a lieutenant from a, you know, a city police force saying that it's not my job to think about the constitutionality. So I guess there's a question that
yeah,
I would have.
Right, exactly.
Are these guys being trained to think, or are they being told not to even consider that? Is there any training at all involving the Constitution with law enforcement these days?
Most of the training they get in the academy is, here's the current state of the art when it comes to the case law and Fourth Amendment, basically being taught what they can and can't do with an eye towards, here's how you justify what you do. The Fourth Amendment, for example, has been so eroded in this country, there's really no search you can conjure up in a hypothetical that I can't find, that the court has not created a loophole to allow, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's inevitable discovery, whether it's officer safety, you know, there's all kinds of little loopholes they've created. And so this is what police are taught. They're taught, oh, you know, you can use the terry stop exception,
right,
they call it, where an officer can search you and the area around you within your reach for his own safety. So without a warrant.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll say inevitable discovery. Oh, we would have found it eventually anyway, so it's
right.
Okay.
Right.
So there's, you know, they create all these doctrines, and that's what they're really taught in most academies. They're really not taught the Constitution itself. And this is actually a problem I saw in law school. You're taught the case law. You're not taught the Constitution. You don't go back and read the Federalist Papers and the debates on the Constitution, in the conventions. You don't read the notes on the debate on the Bill of Rights and why they were written. You don't read all of that stuff, and you don't read American history for the background behind it. So you don't, you only read what the judges have to say. Mm-hmm. And so there's this worship of judges, and that's what you just talked about. You've got a lieutenant who says, hey, it's my job to enforce the law until, unless some court says stop.
Right.
And of course, the legislature has the same mindset. Congress, right down to your local state legislature, same mindset. Our job is just to do what our constituents want and what we think is right, and we'll just pass legislation that we think is good until unless a court tells us it's unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do what we want until a court says no, or we're going to do what we're ordered to do until a court says no. That is not in keeping with their oath.
Right.
Why would it be that the founders put the obligation in Article 6 of the Constitution itself that every officer of every level of government, not just judicial, but also legislative and executive, that all swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution? Why would that be there if the Constitution is merely what the judges say it is,
mm-hmm.
and that your duty is to do whatever you're told to do or whatever you think is okay until a judge says no? You know, the oath would be, I will support and defend whatever the judges tell me to
right.
do. That'd be the oath.
Right.
That's not what it is.
Right.
So obviously the founders, in their wisdom, understood that you had to have checks and balances. You have checks and, you know, you learn this in political science, checks and balances in the separations of powers between the three branches of government. And that's true. So Congress has an obligation to say no to something the president's doing wrong and vice versa. But you also have checks and balances between the federal government and the states, and you also have checks and balances of every person in the chain of command all the way down. Now look at New York, for example. The Governor Cuomo slammed through the legislature during a so-called emergency session the New York SAFE Act, which is an atrocious violation of the Second Amendment.
Yes.
It's the obligation and duty of every person in that chain. Every legislator had a duty and responsibility to say no. And now that it's been passed, every officer in the street, whether state police or local police or sheriff's deputies, they all have a duty to say no if they believe it's unconstitutional. And some already are. You've got sheriffs of New York, stand-up sheriffs who are both keeper sheriffs, who are saying no, like Sheriff Lori up there in upstate New York. Very good people. So this is what we're seeing across the country, is that there are some who are waking up to that personal duty and responsibility. Just like when I was a paratrooper in the Army. If I received an order that I believed was unlawful under the laws of war or under the UCMJ, I had a personal responsibility to say no.
Is that
saying you just following orders is no defense, right?
Right. But is that still – you're obviously a paratrooper a while ago. Is that still the train of thought you think that those guys have now?
Well, sure, certainly it is in the military.
Okay, cool.
The military is the one place where they do get decent instruction on that duty to refuse unlawful orders.
Okay.
Problem is that it's in the context of the laws of war in the UCMJ. So they taught about that. For example, the My Lai massacre back during the Vietnam War, where you had Lieutenant Calley, who was, you know, he defended himself in his court-martial by saying, I was just following orders. And that was ruled to have been, you know, no valid defense, and he was convicted.
Right.
So, and of course, we told the Nazis in Nuremberg the same thing. Just following orders, no defense. And so, and now the modern context, the military, the example most often used now is Abu Ghraib, where you had some, you know, pretty bad violations of human rights being done.
Yeah.
And same thing. So they're taught that. They're taught that when it comes to the laws of war, there's certain things you just can't do. You know, you can't kill non-combatants, you can't kill surrendering prisoners, you can't torture people, things like that. Problem is that they're not taught about the Constitution. Same problem. So that when they're used domestically, whether it's at Hurricane Katrina, whether it's a possible deployment during Bundy Ranch, where they were almost used domestically, whether it's Waco back in the day, where Delta was advising the police and advising Janet Reno, whenever they're using the military domestically, now what are you going to do? So now it's not just the laws of war that are in play. It's also our Bill of Rights, right?
Right.
It's also the constitutional rights of American citizens. And unless they've had instruction on the Constitution, they're in the same boat as the cops. Ignorant of the Constitution, more likely to follow orders, back to Katrina, okay?
Right.
You had deployed National Guard and current serving standing army enforcing unconstitutional orders to disarm Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. There's the rub.
Well, that's where we're at then. I'm going to take you into left field for just a second, if you don't mind, Stuart. I just wanted to get your impression on something that I've got a pretty big feeling about, canine dogs personally. There's a lot of people that have been put in jail, for executing a law enforcement officer for killing a dog. And I'm kind of the opinion that until a dog learns to speak English and can take an oath to the Constitution, or until a dog can control itself and doesn't need to be controlled by another person holding a leather leash around its neck, that perhaps they're really not law enforcement officers and maybe they're just a tool that's being used.
I think you get a good point.
Is that what you would think about that? Are they violating the Fourth Amendment by using them to search when there's not a warrant, I guess would be where I'd be going with that. Are they in fact a tool and not a law enforcement officer, you know?
Well, I mean, make a good point. You know, a dog can't take an oath to support and defend the Constitution, so how could they possibly be an officer if the Constitution requires that every officer take the oath? So that's a valid point.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you back me up on that, because that's something I've been feeling for a long, long time. And I really don't like it when they elevate a dog's rights to rights, you know, bigger than my dog or bigger than me. It just doesn't make sense to me. But anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about, since we've kind of outlined the problem right now, you know, we've got this essentially, we've got a lot of people following orders and not necessarily thinking clearly about some of the things that potentially they might be asked to do. But are there, I know we're going to talk about Sheriff London for just a second, but I want to talk about stories like that where there are glimmers of hope out there. So any type of story like that that you can offer us where it's not all doom and gloom, where there are law enforcement officers stepping up and doing the right thing, I think people would really like to hear about that, if you wouldn't mind, Stuart.
Well, and it kind of goes hand in hand with the citizens also doing the right thing. And the flip side of the obligation and duty of the current serving is the obligation and duty of us veterans and of all Americans. Like within our organization, we also have associate members who may have never served in any official capacity, you know, military, police, or first responder, but they join as an associate member to support our mission, and they become part of our team regardless of their background. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to our responsibility. The current serving in uniform have a duty to stand down, to refuse to be used as tools of oppression against us. We, though, have a duty to stand up. The American people have to solve these problems.
Yes.
You can't, this is one thing I stress with people about the military, you can't expect the military to fix our problems. Like there are some people who, in their misguided patriotism, want the military to take over and pull a coup or something against these corrupt politicians.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be going from the frying pan into the fire. It's not their job to fix everything. It is my job and your job, Mr. and Mrs. America. It's our job and duty to fix things from the bottom up. And so just as the current serving have a duty to refuse to obey unlawful orders, we also have a duty to refuse to obey unlawful acts. So things that are contrary to the Constitution, as the Supreme Court has said, you know, over and over again, are null and void from inception.
Mm-hmm.
They have no force and effect. They create no duties and responsibilities. They create no penalties. So any law or so-called law passed by Congress is not real law unless it comports with the Constitution. So because Constitution is supreme law of the land, right?
Right.
So we citizens, and this goes for state legislature, your local town council, whoever it is, If they're passing some act that they decree that you must comply with, and it's not constitutional, you have the right and, in fact, the duty to disobey it. And so we're seeing that. That's what you call nullification, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nullification can be done by the state. It can be done at the county level, at the town level, and it can also be done by individuals. And so that's what we see across the country as well. Back to New York, the New York Safe Act, its counterpart in Connecticut. You've got hundreds of thousands of gun owners who are refusing to register themselves and their weapons under these edicts by saying, hey, we don't consider them constitutional, we're not going to comply.
Mm-hmm.
We will not comply. You're seeing that in Washington State. Same kind of thing going on there, where they had a recent law that was passed that mandated that any private sale of a handgun or rifle must go through a dealer and be done with a background check. You've got citizens in Washington State saying, we're not going to comply.
Right.
And so you have this resistance by people of nullification, and then you're seeing it by the sheriffs and the police who are saying, we're not going to enforce it. New York, Connecticut, all across the country by sheriffs saying, we're not going to enforce unconstitutional laws. In the wake of the Sandy Hook incident in particular, with all the wave of attempted gun control laws,
uh-huh.
you had many sheriffs across the country, very stand-up guys, saying, hey, in my county, it's not going to happen. You're not going to get gun confiscation here. don't care what Congress passes, what kind of nonsense act they pass, it will not be enforced in my county. And not only will I not enforce it, not aid and assist in it, I will also interpose, a lot of these sheriffs are saying. I will stand up for the people of my county against it. Mm-hmm. So now that really throws a wrinkle, a serious monkey wrench in the system. These corrupt politicians like Cuomo, what do they do? How are they going to enforce their edicts in a county where the sheriff is standing in the way? The guy elected by the people, hopefully backed up by the people of his county, that's mm-hmm. the other part of the equation. If that sheriff has a posse behind him made up of all of the able-bodied people in his county, now what's Cuomo going to do? Now he's in a, you know, it's a whole other ballgame. So this is what you want. This is what the founders did. This is the model they gave us. This is what's been used, you know, whether it's back to the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions by Jefferson and Madison talking about the obligation and duty to nullify and to interpose. This is the solution. This is the way the founders constructed our system.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have local and state checks on abuse by the federal government, just as the federal government can act as a check on local and state abuse. The two check each other. Go back and read the Federalist Papers. That's what they said we were getting, right? They said that the states would be a counter to the federal government. So what's happening now is that is being revived. Of course, that's been kind of suppressed. Americans are not taught their own history. You know, they're being taught that, oh no, you just have to do what you're told to do and,
right.
and what the Congress says is law until the Supreme Court says no.
Yep.
That's what Americans have been taught for generations. So we're getting back to the original idea that the founders had of checks and balances and a government that's subservient to the people and where liberty is primary, not the rule of the rulers. So we're getting back there now. And it's scary to some people. Because they're thinking, oh, geez, so any sheriff can decide he doesn't like a law. Yeah, that's kind of how it works.
that's what you want.
He might be right. He might be wrong, just like when I was a paratrooper. If I get an order from my commander, my CO, if I think it's an unconstitutional order or unlawful order and I refuse to obey it, if I'm wrong and it turns out it was a legal order, I could go to Leavenworth for that, right?
Right.
Or be executed in time of war. But if I was correct, let's say it was an unlawful order. If I obey it, I can go to Leavenworth. See what I'm saying? You're on
yeah.
the hook either way.
Right.
If you obey an unconstitutional, unlawful order, you're on the hook. If you refuse to follow one that is lawful, you're on the hook. So there's always that individual choice that has to be made,
mm-hmm.
and then there's penalties on one side or the other, depending upon whether you're right or wrong.
Well, at least they're in a position where they're forced to think about it, though. I mean, at least with that catch 22, you have to.
Well, every cop should be the same way. Of course, it's not that way with police in this country.
Right.
If they go along with something that later on is found to have been unconstitutional or wrong, they don't pay a personal penalty. Yeah,
I know.
They should, but they don't.
That's why I'm a big proponent of this whole, I want to do a national police offender registry, just like a sex offender registry. If you're named in a lawsuit, seriously, if you shoot somebody and on duty as a law enforcement officer and it becomes, you know, apparent that that was negligent homicide or whatever, if you're named in a settlement, you should be put on a list. I don't want that guy to go. I mean, look at Wilson in Missouri. He was part of the Jenkins police program and they were disbanded for racism. You know, and so that everybody on that whole police department should not just be allowed to go across town and get another job at a department and then 6 months later shoot an unarmed black kid. You know, that there's correlation there and there's obviously a history. And if we could incorporate shame and stigma, I think honestly, we would keep these guys from ending up going across the country and getting a job as a mall security guard and doing something else. And I'm not saying all police officers are bad, of course, but I'm just saying if there are bad ones out there, we need to have a way to identify them and isolate them from the rest of the mix, don't you think?
Well, it's sad that you would have departments that would hire somebody who had done something wrong someplace else.
Yeah.
And this goes back to, and there's a recent article by Frank Serpico, you know, the famous New York police detective who was a whistleblower. He wrote an article in Politico a couple months ago. It was really good. I recommend. And he talked about how back in 1972 when he was blowing the whistle on corruption in the NYPD, he became a pariah. He was labeled, he was blackballed by his fellow officers for even daring to expose inarguable lawbreaking and corruption
right.
by fellow officers. Just the fact that he blew the whistle on criminals in the police force was enough to make him persona non grata. Any, from now on, any alumni events or anything like that with the NYPD, he was never invited. And that's sad. It should be that the good guys are rewarded and held up as the example of what should be done
right.
when they blow the whistle on fellow officers who are bad. And instead, it's the other way around. So that it went to show you that the pervasiveness of the corruption at that time. But what he said in the article recently is hey, nothing's changed. Today it's the same as it was when I was fighting against this. He said the bad officers don't fear exposure or the consequences of their behavior by the good officers. And until that day, until that paradigm is shifted and switched around, we're going to continue to see abuse of rights and corruption in police forces. And I think he's right.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he also pointed out that when an officer leaves for his duty, when he goes out on a shift, he knows that he could shoot just about anybody and probably be exonerated for it. He
could
find some rationale to say that, well, the officer feared for his life, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
And he said, once again, that's a recipe for disaster. So there's no accountability. They know they can do almost anything they want when they go out on duty. And so then you're relying on their own good nature only.
Right.
And that's not how it's supposed to work. You're supposed to have checks, once again, checks and balances on power.
Mm-hmm. I've got to ask you, though, about body cameras. That's the big initiative now, you know, body cameras. We've got to get body cameras on all these officers. What are your opinions?
Those only help when you also have a – and I like body cameras because then it's hard to lie, right?
Apparently.
What's happened is right there on video.
Right.
But
– does it matter, though?
It doesn't matter because there's some things caught on film. Look at the choking of the guy
Eric
in New York City.
Absolutely.
That's on film, right.
Yeah.
So what has to be go along with that is a commitment to the rights of the people. And instead of having it be that the highest, you know, value is the police officer is going to go home to his family at night.
Mm-hmm.
That's not his oath. His oath is not, I'm going to do whatever it takes to go home at night. His oath is, I swear to support and defend the Constitution.
That's right.
His oath is also not, I swear to support and defend the property and the lives of the, which is nice. It's nice to be, you know, saying you're going to defend the people and against criminals, but even that's not the oath. The oath is to the Constitution.
That's right.
So it's not, we're going to do whatever we need to do to stop criminals. You know, that's the recipe for a police state. But, oh, as long as they're going after bad guys, you can't criticize them. You can't tell them they can't do these things, but they have a right to do it. So look at the Pennsylvania fugitive, the guy that shot the state trooper.
Yeah.
Remember him? Remember that guy?
Mm-hmm.
There was a Pennsylvania lawyer, Joshua Prince, who, stand-up lawyer, who said, hey, look, you know, when you're in the Poconos there, when they're excluding people from their homes, he wrote a letter to the police saying, I'm going to seek an injunction from the judge against you doing this without a warrant, something that shows that the person's actually in the home. You can't just exclude people from their homes. And he was attacked for doing that. And there was also a shoot to kill order put out by the police that said if they see the fugitive, they could shoot him on sight unless he's actively surrendered.
I gotta interrupt you. I apologize. We gotta go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we will talk a little.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply. Your future looks really great. I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the MicroPlant Powder family. MicroPlant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MUSA.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods, but what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy 3 or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
We hold these truths to be self-evident and that all men are created equal.
The Freedom Link
with Joe Joseph, Monday through Friday on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And thank all of you at truthfrequencyradio.com in the chat room today. Very good questions rolling in for our very special guest today, Mr. Stuart Rhodes. Of course, he is the president and founder of the Oath Keepers organization. And I highly recommend everybody go to oathkeepers.org, make a donation, get involved with this. This is one of these organizations, ladies and gentlemen, that's actually making a difference in the world that we live in, and especially with this situation between citizens and law enforcement officers these days. I mean, we need mediators right now. We need people who understand what the role should be and how we can move towards that. So that's again why Mr. Rhodes has joined us today, and very happy to have him. Before the break, Stuart, we were just talking about that situation that that went down in Pennsylvania with the slaying of the two state patrol officers there, and you were talking about a citizen or a lawyer stepping up with an injunction or something like that. We're talking about solutions. So you want to just pick that story up where we were?
This was Joshua Prince, who's a very strong gun rights advocate in Pennsylvania, has been giving the anti-gunners in Pennsylvania fits. But during the manhunt for Eric Frying, that was the suspect, the state police had issued, or the police commissioner had issued, a shoot-on-site order. The police could shoot him on site unless he was actively surrendering. And that's really military rules of engagement. It's like on the battlefield, I shoot the enemy on site, which is what you would do. Unless he's actively surrendering. This is unconstitutional. And so Joshua Prince, this lawyer from Pennsylvania, in keeping with his oath, said, hey, you can't do that. And if you don't stop doing that, I'm going to seek an injunction from a judge. And he was right. And the police commissioner then changed the order. And, you know, we're making it and comporting with the Constitution. Hey, unless the guy's an actual direct threat to somebody, you can't just shoot him. Right. You got to give him a chance to surrender. So, but he got death threats because he dared to stand up for the Constitution, and they said, oh, how dare you? You know, this guy deserves to die, the dirtbag, and all this kind of stuff. And
right.
And him and his staff and his law firm got death threats.
Wow.
For opposing, you know, this shoot-on-site order, and also for opposing the exclusion of hundreds of people from their homes.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you can't do that. You can't just exclude people from their homes. It's not martial law. It's not lawful in this country to do something like that. And so for doing that, he was attacked and,
right.
and had death threats. And so this is the kind of sad state we're in. If someone thinks someone's a dirtbag, and then if you stand up for the constitutional rights of a dirtbag, then you're a dirtbag. That's what they think. And they don't want you to do that. They're like, oh, screw that guy. It's like Jose Padilla, right? Here's an American citizen who was accused of aiding Al-Qaeda, and he was held for 3 years in a brig in South Carolina after he was captured at O'Hare International Airport, coming back from the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
will say, well, he was a dirtbag, so to hell with him. Well, it doesn't matter. His constitutional rights were violated, and if we don't defend, that's the whole point of the Bill of Rights. Yep. If you don't defend the rights of even someone you consider a dirtbag, then when you throw his rights out the window, you're throwing your own rights and your children's rights out the window, too. Mm-hmm. There's no legal construct that says, oh, if you're not a dirtbag, then you get constitutional rights, but if you're a dirtbag, you don't. It doesn't work that way.
No, and not supposed to.
We kill the rights for them, we kill the rights for ourselves.
That's right. Since we were on the topic of the gentleman in Pennsylvania kind of being attacked for his outspoken views on gun rights and things, I just wanted to touch on that real quick. Have you experienced any personal blowback from leading this organization, or have you been the victim of any kind of threats or anything like that, Stuart?
I've had them over the years. Usually it's been from some skinhead because we're not racist.
Oh, right.
I've had a couple of some racist people that have threatened me. Mm-hmm. So, but mainly the way that our enemies attack us is if they try to demonize us and make us out as being racist somehow, or saying we're plotting to overthrow the government. And both of those things are things that are precluded in our bylaws. We're very much like the U.S. military. No one can belong to Oath Keepers if they advocate the overthrow of the U.S. government. And no one can belong to Oath Keepers if they express racial discrimination or discrimination for religion.
But so you've gotten the Southern Poverty Law Center experience.
Oh, yeah,
a little bit,
yeah.
Right?
Which is to me a badge of honor.
Yeah, I
Southern
totally
Poverty
agree.
Law Center. Yep. If you're attacked by them, it means you're doing something right.
Right, Roger that. All right, I want to talk a little bit.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, and like I said, their method of attack is to talk about us. They know we're not racist, but they talk about us, then they'll talk about the KKK or something, and then they'll talk about us some more.
Right.
They try to create this false association in the minds of the readers. So like, we went to Ferguson to guard some of the buildings there against arsonists. One of the shops we were guarding belonged to a black lady who owned a bakery. Mm-hmm. And there was also a Chinese owned restaurant. We were guarding the businesses and homes of people across the spectrum. So, we defend everybody.
Right, right. And I know that's why I'm so encouraging of people to go to oathkeepers.org and support you guys, because, again, one of the only people out there that's actually making a difference. We had talked a little bit earlier today and about this pending legislation or this pending change of legislation that might be affecting people's rights or ability to get ammo for the AR-15. Can you talk about that whole issue? Because we haven't really gotten to bring it up on
the
air.
Well, the ATF claims the authority to, in part of its rulemaking powers, which I think is unconstitutional in the first place. But what they've done is they've said, oh, we're redesignating an M855 ball ammunition, which is the green tip ammo that has the penetrator round in it, a hardened penetrator. They're saying that this is non-sporting ammunition, and they're therefore going to ban it. Mm-hmm. As though sporting purpose has anything to do with whether something is constitutional or not. It has nothing to do with the Second Amendment.
Right.
In the Second Amendment, the whole point of a well-regulated militia made up of an armed population, it's a military function. This is what drives me nuts about the current sad state of affairs when it comes to understandings of gun rights. It's there for a military purpose. You look at Article 1, Section 8. It talks about how Congress can call forth the militia of the states for three purposes. One is to suppress insurrection. Another one is to repel invasions. And the third is execute the laws of the Union. Well, how do you repel an invasion unless you're well armed with military-grade equipment?
Right.
So that's the whole point of the Second Amendment. It's not defense. It's not sporting purpose. It's not hunting. That's not the criteria.
Right.
And even when it comes to self-defense, it's not about personal self-defense against criminals. Going back to Biden saying all you need is a double-barrel shotgun or a revolver. That's not the point. The point is military weapons in the hands of the people. That's what it's supposed to be securing.
Mm-hmm.
So above all other purposes, you need to have rounds in your hand, in your AR-15, that are of military utility. So it's like the world's been turned upside down by these people.
Right.
They want you to believe that anything that's not a sporting purpose, that's not useful for hunting deer, is somehow, verboten, that you should not have it. That's the mindset of them. Of course, in the background behind that, the ultimate goal is completely disarmed population.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look at Japan. You can't even have a 38 in Japan. You can't even have a 22 in Japan.
Really?
Japanese fly all the way to Hawaii to shoot 22s. So that's the ultimate goal of people like Cuomo and Bloomberg and all the rest of them. Mm-hmm. But on the way there, they'll try to use a sporting purpose criteria as their way to attack your possession of firearms and ammunition. So that's what this is. So, but I encourage you guys, everybody out there, go get all the green tip you can, and I encourage you to go buy all the other AP rounds and 308 that you can find too.
Right.
Stock up on it, because that's next.
Do you feel like this this massive purchasing campaign by the Department of Homeland Security, in conjunction with the fact that from what I understand, the military is not recycling their brass anymore, which they used to do. They used to be able to, get a bunch of money back from recycling all their brass, and apparently they're shipping all that to China right now. Do you think that whole program is really fundamentally about limiting our ability to get ammunition, or is that all just kind of conspiratorial nonsense?
No, I think it is. I mean, they're just as, you know, the government has melted down. Back in the Clinton administration, for example, they melted down surplus M14s and M1As Ellen Grands rather than selling them to the people. So, you know, yes, I think they're cutting off the supply of brass from military surplus and sending it overseas instead. As just one more thing that they can do in the current political environment. They're going to do whatever they can.
Right.
So, you know, banning importation of firearms and ammunition from other countries, they've done that in the past. You can expect them to do that some more. This kind of redesignation is non-sporting for certain rounds. They'll do what they can. The bill that's going through Congress right now to ban body armor.
Yes.
Private possession of body armor is another example. They don't want you to be able to defend yourself.
Right.
And the ultimate goal is a servile population that's completely dependent upon the state.
Well, and you know, the argument that always astounds me is these people who say that they're anti-gun, but they want the police to have guns so they can come and take our guns away. So how can you be anti-gun if you then support, you know, the organization?
Not.
Right, exactly.
They're anti-private possession of firearms.
Right.
They're not really anti-gun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're fine with guns in the hands of police officers and military, but not in your hands.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
But they're statists. They're big government statists, whether they are, you know, outright communists or not, they're still statists. They believe that the state is all powerful and should enjoy an actual monopoly on the use of force.
Ugh.
That's not the founders' design.
I agree. Since we're talking about the Constitution, there is a question from the chat room that I want to throw at you here.
Sure.
Somebody was asking about the Constitution effectively being suspended by the Banking Act back around 1933. Do you know anything about that, or is that another kind of conspiratorial myth? Or,
you know, I don't really know. There's been people have said things like that over the years. Mm-hmm. I mean, look. They haven't followed the Constitution really since the Civil War, and you can go way back. I mean, heck, look at right after it was written, the ink was probably dry on the Constitution, and the Adams administration violated it with the, you know, John Adams, unfortunately, violated it with the Alien Sedition Acts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had newspaper reporters being and editors being jailed for criticizing the president. This was, you know, obviously grossly unconstitutional under the First Amendment, and they still did it.
Right.
That's why you had Jefferson and Madison saying, hey, the states have a duty to nullify. That's what they were talking about, was the Alien Sedition Acts. So from the very beginning, you've had, I guess it's human nature. Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
That's right.
And even good people like John Adams, an American founding father, can go down the wrong road with the assistance of real bad guys like Alexander Hamilton. So there's always a struggle throughout our history to comport with the Constitution and stay on the right track. And you're going to have cabals and groups and conspiracies to subvert and destroy that. I would say, yes, the bankers have a hand in it. The Federal Reserve Act, grossly unconstitutional, mm-hmm. was one of the stakes to the heart of our republic. Absolutely. The financial bill. But there are other things that are also equally important. The Cold War brought in a permanent military industrial complex that you know, Eisenhower warned us against.
Right.
He was right. So there's another big element there. This perpetual, era of emergency that we've been in since, you know, during the Cold War, and then when the Cold War died away, they found a new one, the War on Terror, right?
Yeah.
Now we're in another permanent state of emergency, a permanent buildup. And now it's come home domestically. Like you said, you got the military selling military equipment giving it away, actually, to police departments.
Mm-hmm.
All they got to do is pay for the transport. You got DHS doing all it can to help with that,
mm-hmm.
and sticking its tentacles down into every little local department. So all of this is part of the same puzzle. And the big wake-up call, yes, earlier, you know, why I found Oath Keepers, but the big one for me was the detention of Jose Padilla I touched on earlier.
Right.
He was detained not as a criminal suspect, but under the supposed laws of war. saying that you can just detain him indefinitely for the duration of the conflict, which will never end, and try him by military tribunal is the claim. No grand jury indictment, as required by our Constitution, no jury trial, as required by our Constitution, they claim that they can circumvent jury trial and try him in front of a military tribunal. Hmm. And now we have the president claiming that under the laws of war, he can just kill anybody, including any American, on
That's
sight.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is to me the more important, in your face, right there in black letter law, right there in recent Supreme Court decisions, destruction of the Constitution, that to me is more important than a claim of, you know, some obscure shift that happened back in 1933.
Okay.
It might have something there, but it's just not the whole thing, so I'm saying.
I understand.
It is economic, it's also military, it's also political, it's also legal. We're in a full, there's been a full, across the spectrum, assault on our liberty and on what's left of our republic. And so we have to fight back in each one of those spheres. We need to fight back economically mm-hmm. by having gold, silver in our hands, by, you know, hey, look, the rest of the world's already starting to decouple from the corrupt fiat dollar system.
Oh, every day, insane. It's insane to watch everybody pulling away at this point.
So the dollar's doomed, and even with what any eyes could see it.
Yep.
So what we need to do, though, is don't just sit there and wait for the crash. You got to get ready. You got to, you know, gold and silver in your hand, grow a garden. Like where I'm at, we got chickens. We got like 60 friggin' chickens. They get fresh eggs every morning.
That's awesome.
You got to start insulating yourself and what we call a liberty trade, too. Like Brandon Smith, one of our editors, is really, really up on economy. You should have him on your show sometime. He writes for his own blog, Alt Market. He also writes for Oath Keepers.
Nice.
And, you know, we have a system we call a liberty trade. All that is, hey, pick something that you know you can do in a basic economy, a basic localized economy, even during hard times, whether it's being a machinist or you know, doing your own moonshine, and whatever it is that you think you could do in a simplified economy to make a living, something useful.
Oh, I love
that
it.
You can trade with.
Oh, yeah. And I tell you, so, YouTube is the best thing in the world for that. You can learn anything you want to learn how to do on YouTube these days.
Yeah.
You know?
So if you're an accountant or a lawyer, you better go look and find something useful that your neighbor's going to want to trade
right.
you eggs for, you know?
That's right.
So that's important. Yes, there is, I think, a conservative conspiracy to destroy our republic. And like I said, I think it's gone on at least since 1913. But the solution is what they don't want you to do is to become independent locally. They don't want you reaching out to your neighbors and organizing with your neighbors, which is what we advocate. Mm-hmm. That's why Oath Keepers has our CPT program, which stands for Community Preparedness Teams. And what we do there is we encourage the veterans to take lead because they're so well trained to then turn around and train their community, train neighborhood watches, church groups, mutual aid associations, just get their community strong again. And the goal, the ultimate goal, is to revitalize a real militia made up of the people themselves. You know, and on the way there, we support sheriff's posses. We think that's critical. Like, for example, Sheriff London there down in New Mexico is standing up to the IRS. There's a sale day after tomorrow that he said he's going to stop. Well, it's easier for him to have some credibility about being able to stop that if he has a posse behind him of all the people in this county.
Right.
You know, the feds are more likely to blink when they're looking at a sheriff backed up by thousands of veterans.
That's right.
And well-trained citizens organized in a posse.
Well, look at the Bundy situation.
Just a sheriff by himself. Yeah, look at Bundy, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there it was, you know, people from all over the country rushing to an emergency where we saw a family about to be Waco'd, mm-hmm. and veterans came from all over the country, including many Oath Keepers. Be better, though, if the people of Clark County, Nevada, had it handled, and even better yet, if their Sheriff Gillespie, had been a constitutional sheriff and had interposed. They didn't have that, though. Sheriff Gillespie is a turncoat, do whatever the feds tell him to do kind of guy.
Yep.
So he wasn't there to protect the Bundy family. And the local veterans weren't organized, and the local citizens weren't really ready to do it either. So to me, that's a fail. You know,
but
the goal should be constitutional sheriffs backed up by a posse in every county in America so they can handle themselves. And so that's what we're trying to do is get people to think local, right? You think nationally when it comes to saving our country, but you act locally. What you do in your own neighborhood, you know, do you have a neighborhood watch? That's the first question.
Right.
If you don't, nothing else matters until you get the neighborhood watch established. a march to D.C. to wave signs and all that kind of stuff, your time is better spent organizing your neighborhood, mm-hmm. and then your town, then your county, then your state from the yes. bottom up.
I completely agree. Okay, I'm going to throw you back out into left field here real quick. Let's just say, hypothetically, sure. Stuart Rhodes is the new Attorney General of the United States. It's day one. What in the heck do you do to get us out of this mess, brother?
You know, that goes back to what I just said, though. The solution, you're not going to find a solution. There's no magic pill. There's no silver bullet in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
What really counts is what Sheriff London is doing right now in New York, what Sheriff Lori is doing up in New Mexico, and then what Sheriff Lori is doing in New York State. Sheriff standing up at the bottom level, that's what counts right now.
Right.
Because that is something that can be done right now that has a real effect. And the remedy is in the states. What should happen is the state attorney generals and the state governors should be nullifying, should be arresting federal officers who come into their states that commit crimes against the Constitution. That's what should be happening right now.
Hmm.
So, but were I attorney general in some kind of magic wand situation,
yeah.
I'd have a lot of indictments. You know?
Right.
But then you got to have a federal court willing to try somebody. And that's the problem we have, is the oath breakers dominate every branch.
Mm-hmm.
It's upside down from the founders' intent. Their intent was that, like in Congress, for example, you know, Congress can kick out a member of Congress for violating ethical rules in Congress. So Congress can police its own. The Congress can also impeach the president or any other federal, you know, federal judges and every other federal officer. But what do you do when you have a Congress dominated by oath breakers? They're not going to discipline themselves, and they won't discipline anybody else.
Right.
So, for example, they won't impeach the president. They wouldn't impeach Bush. They wouldn't impeach Obama. They're not going to impeach anybody. It's because they're part of the same oath breaker club, whether they're left or right, whether Republican or Democrat, they're all oath breakers. So what do you do when you got a corrupt system that's dominated by oath breakers? Well, you have to start local. You got to start right in your backyard. You clean your own backyard. And then if we all do that, then from the bottom up, we'll purge out the oath breakers. And you have to be willing to purge out the oath breakers in your own party. If you vote for, like say if you're a Republican, if you vote for a Republican because he's a Republican, even though you know that he's violated the Constitution with one of his votes in the past,
right.
You are committing a violation of the Constitution. You are violating your own oath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by voting for that lesser of two evils. That's how we got where we are.
They're still evil.
So, yeah, it's still evil.
Yeah.
So you have to say, enough's enough. I'm going to actually defend the Constitution. I'm not going to support people who will violate it. I'm not going to comply with unconstitutional acts or with pretend legislation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to draw a line in the sand. But you've got to get organized with your neighbors. You have to. If you're by yourself, only you and my mom and pa and the kids, and you're going to get ruled over. Whether, you know, look at during an economic collapse, for example,
mm-hmm.
MS-13 rolls through your neighborhood. Unless you're organized, they're going to roll right over you guys one house at a time, right?
Right.
Any gang, any outlaw, biker gang, or gang of patriot, or prepper pirates, or whatever you want to call them, that wants to come in is going to take you down. This is the problem I have with the preparedness community. It's usually secret squirrel. I'm going to hide in my basement with my bags of rice and beans and freeze-dried food. I'm going to light out the storm, they think.
No.
Well, no. All they're doing is storing away all that freeze-dried food for MS-13.
Yeah, whoever the toughest guy is that comes to the neighborhood after that.
Yeah, yeah. That's who's going to get it. Oh, thanks for storing that for me. Bam.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. You know, you know. So that's the reality. This is why you can't reinvent the wheel. The founders already showed us what works. What works is a militia made up of the people. That means the further from that ideal you get, the less secure and less free you are. The closer to that ideal you get back to, the more secure you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So far more important than stacks of freeze-dried food and high-speed gear is community and organization. I believe in food storage. You should have as much as you can get.
Yes.
But you got to have the training, and you got to have the organization that goes with it.
Yeah, because you got to keep it safe.
Even if you're a super well-trained former Delta operator, if you you got to sleep sometime.
Right.
So you got to have a team, and you got to have community.
So I gotta since we're talking about community, I gotta tell you my local sheriff is he's not a constitutional sheriff. He in fact actually runs what's estimated to be the largest meth distribution ring in our state, and has been doing that for quite a while, according to some of the people that I've been speaking with. So,
wow.
Yeah. Oh,
he's quite the entrepreneur, huh?
Killer guy, entrepreneur, absolutely. So here's my question, though. So what would you suggest for someone like me who, you know, is aware of the issue and would like to go talk to a sheriff like that and fix the problem? Obviously, get somebody in there. But
he runs the meth distribution system.
Yes, they have been caught trafficking meth in vehicles that they are, you know, state property vehicles over the last.
Well, you got to purge them out. You got to purge them out of
office.
Okay,
so but how do you do that? How do you do that without being concerned about blowback? I guess would be my question. You know, how do we unroot somebody like that who's so, you know, basically indoctrinated into the system that the local people just don't seem to care? What would you suggest for someone like
well,
me?
Well, if your neighbors are not going to care, they're not going to purge them out, then what are you going to do?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm asking you. What do I do?
Well, I mean, you got to start with your neighbors. Start with your veterans.
Right.
Wake them up and expose the corruption. I mean, this is the problem with the drug war. This is the problem with you know, prohibition. Uh-huh. This is where we're at again, right? Same thing happened during prohibition. During prohibition, people want whiskey; they're going to get whiskey, and the local police tend to be in the back pocket of the whiskey makers, right?
Right.
Uh-huh. And the organized crime that grew up around it. Same thing here. Look at Mexico. The cartels dominate the political system down there. Same thing's happening inside the United States now. So what's the answer? I think legalization's the answer, right?
I agree with that.
If you decriminalize it, bring it out of the black market, it takes away the massive profits, and it takes away the incentive to bribe police and the police's incentive to accept the bribe. You know, no one's going to bribe a local cop. You know, maybe in New York, but no one else is going to buy the local cop to be able to sell cigarettes, you know.
Right.
They're going to have a massive amount of money being made selling cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Unless you get cigarette taxes, which now and create the black market in cigarettes. So, you know, I know a lot of conservatives won't want to hear this, but I think legalization is the only way you're going to get rid of that corrupt circle of crime that surrounds prohibited items, mm-hmm. you know. You're never going to stamp out the illicit drug trade. It's not going to happen. It can't be done. All you're going to do is stamp out the Bill of Rights while you're trying to stamp out the drug trade.
That's right.
And that's what we've seen here. Like Sheriff Mack often says, you know, the war on drugs has been a war on the Bill of Rights. And he's correct. And so in the end, you got to legalize it to get rid of the corruption. That's the only way. And then you treat it like we do alcoholism. Yes, it's illegal to sell alcohol to minors. And people who abuse alcohol, you know, if they go out and they get DUIs or kill someone on the highway, you put them behind bars.
That's right.
You know, and you treat them as what they are, an alcoholic. Uh-huh. I think the same thing goes for the drugs, too. That's the way you handle it.
It makes sense to me. Well, Mr. Stuart Rhodes, we are out of time for the day. I really, really appreciate you coming back to the program and look forward to talking to you again sometime in the future, sir.
Thank you. My pleasure. Anytime.
And ladies and gentlemen, please, as I said before, please go to oathkeepers.org and let's support Stuart and what he's doing. Give them a little donation. Throw that website onto your Facebook page. Spread it around. Let's get this word out. It's still astounding to me that there are people out there who are not familiar with the Oath Keepers. So again, Stuart, thank you very much for being here. Ladies and gentlemen, please go and support the oathkeepers.org. Do your part. We can together win all this. I got to let you know tomorrow, Rick Rosoff will be on the show. We'll be having a discussion about Ukraine and NATO and all of this quagmire that we find ourselves in over there. So it'll be another big show tomorrow. Do please tune back in. Thank you guys for being in the chat room today. Everybody take care. We will see you guys on Wednesday.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.